Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Last week in Denver, Brian Thomas, the fossil expert from the ICR, the Institute for Creation Research, was in Denver to talk about dinosaur fossils. And what an honor to have back in studio. Brian, welcome for a second show with Real Science Radio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. This is fun.
I have described you as the world's leading expert on fossil original biological tissue. And I've said, if anybody disagrees with that, they'll have to fight me for it.
And I said, put up your dukes because I'm not yeah, I'm not quite that guy.
You disagreed with me. But, you know, some people would say Mary Schweitzer, because she's been published in all these dinosaur soft tissue papers. Astounding work she's done. Truly brilliant.
Excellent work.
But, you know, an expert is somebody who knows more and more about less and less. And she's got this very narrow focus, which is great. We needed her to do that. But you truly have a view that encompasses what could be called fresh fossils, original tissue fossils, not just from dinosaurs, but across the spectrum. And I think you've got a broader scope and a stronger foundation. So that's why we always brag about you.
Well, I appreciate that. But it is this perspective of simply this. I'm willing to actually entertain the concept that these fossils that contain molecular preservation, is what she calls them in her papers, or what you call soft tissues or original tissues, were deposited thousands, not millions of years ago. I'm willing to consider that as a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
She's not.
Mm. Right. In her worldview, they simply cannot be young, even though we have red blood cells from Triceratops and Hadrosaur and original biological material from all kinds of species now throughout the fossil record. But today, we wanted to talk about carbon-14, because as it turns out, there's loads of carbon-14 in dinosaur bones and, in fact, all kinds of fossils throughout the geologic column.
And earth materials. Anything with carbon in it, we've tested. Actually, secular labs have done most of this testing, and they've been finding for decades now carbon-14, which is radioactive isotope of carbon, in, you name it, whether it's coal or diamonds or natural gas or oil or, and even some fossils. What they're doing is they've been looking for an earth material that has carbon in it that is what they call carbon dead.
So they could use it to calibrate their equipment.
Correct. Correct.
So
they can't find a source.
They can't find it.
No. Nope.
Because carbon-14 only lasts for thousands of years, not millions. So a diamond is supposed to be a billion years old. It should have no carbon-14 in it. And lo and behold, they figure, okay, let's use diamond to calibrate our AMS device, their accelerator mass spectrometer. And the problem is the diamonds have carbon-14 in them. You mentioned before the show that even marble has been found to have radiocarbon.
They tried marble, and coal is what they use now. But even the coals that they use for calibration have some radioactive carbon-14 atoms in them. But that's right, Bob. Imagine a diamond forms. Okay, here's carbon, and it gets compressed, and in certain chemical surroundings, it turns into a diamond. Now, some of the carbon atoms in that diamond are going to be, by the laws of probability, carbon-14, mm-hmm. back at the time that it formed. But here's the thing. Carbon-14 spontaneously turns itself into nitrogen because it's unstable, that hence radioactive. Mm-hmm. So it emits beta particles. It emits energy. And over time, it turns into nitrogen. So after 100,000 years, based on the known decay rate for carbon-14, all of the carbon-14 atoms in that diamond should have turned themselves into nitrogen. But both creationary and evolutionary scientists have measured independently diamonds looking for carbon-14, and they always find it in there.
Always
find it. Which means that it's less than 100,000 years old.
Yes, if the half-life of carbon-14 is relatively short, 5,730 years. So if you have 1,000 carbon-14 atoms, of every trillion carbon atoms today, about one is carbon-14 made by the sun in the upper atmosphere. So if the entire Earth were a ball of carbon-14, I haven't done the calculations myself, but I've read it calculated that it would all become nitrogen in less than 1 million years. In 1 million years, the whole Earth would no longer be carbon-14. It'd be nitrogen.
Right.
So when you have a handful of carbon-14 atoms in a diamond, in 50,000 years up to 100,000 years, depending on how much you had originally, that's it. It's carbon dead. It's all gone by 100,000 years.
And the age assignment for these diamonds is billions of years, and yet they're not carbon dead. They're carbon alive.
Okay, so contamination, right? In the lab, some guy in the lab was having his lunch, and some of the mayonnaise from his ham sandwich got into the diamond. But diamonds are the hardest naturally occurring substance on Earth, so it's not likely that it's going to have contamination inside of the diamond. And then you have the lab process, which has all been peer-reviewed over a period of decades. They are so fabulous at what they do, and they literally count atoms. They tell you how many carbon-14 atoms are in your specimen. And when they find carbon-14, it's everywhere. It's in all these dinosaur bones, all these diamonds. And the data shows a pattern that it's not contamination. If it was contamination, the patterns would be erratic.
If it's contamination, we need to find that out. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Is there contamination? Is there some way that modern carbon that was built recently in the upper atmosphere reached the ground, reached underground, and then made its way into a diamond or made its way into a fossil or into coal or into oil or wherever we find it?
So that's the right scientific method, right? To try to find the contamination.
Yeah.
To try to prove its contamination.
Looking for evidence of contamination. And that's what my research is about.
Yeah.
And I've been looking, and I thought, maybe that's it. Maybe it's laboratory. Maybe the lab had a bad day at the lab, you know, in the mayonnaise and the ham sandwich.
Yeah.
And so we used 5 different laboratories, and we keep getting radiocarbon signal in all of our different samples, no matter which lab we use. And, of course, we have to mask our project intentions. We can't just say, hey, here's a dinosaur fossil. They won't even do the work then. But we use a third party to send these.
To submit the samples. To the labs.
Right.
Right.
Anyway, so we've published in Creation Journal here, the Creation Research Society Quarterly last year, some of these results. And they include some of these dinosaur fossils. Like, who would have thought, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, well, I went to a dinosaur museum. And the first thing they tell me is that, ooh, look, here's a Triceratops, here's a T-Rex.
Yeah.
And it lived and died millions of years ago. And so as a kid, that's what I believed, because that's what I was told.
Right.
And I never would expect radiocarbon to be in these fossils. And yet we found it in Triceratops. We found it in Edmontosaurus. We found it in the outside of the bone and on the inside, the deep interior of the bone.
Edmontosaurus, is that a duck-billed dinosaur?
That's right, yeah, duck-billed dinosaur.
So these two, you just mentioned two different species of dinosaur, and I know we could talk about a lot of different kinds of dinosaurs and fossils, specimens, and earth material, but so you found carbon-14 in both of those dinosaurs in their bones.
Right, exactly. Now, these bones that I'm talking about have age assignments of 67 to 68 million years, something in that range. What's that based on? Well, that age assignment has to ignore the radiocarbon that's in the fossils.
So when they say they use radiometric dating to come up with the ages of the fossils in the geologic column, actually they had those ages before we ever invented radiometric dating.
That's exactly right.
Right?
The ages came from evolution.
Yeah.
The ages came from we have to have millions of years or, you know, some vast time spans in order to convert a dinosaur into a bird or a mammal, you know, into a whale, walking mammal into a whale. You've got to have millions of years for that. And so
they had the geologic column and the basic chronology of that, the evolutionary chronology, before they began with the radiometric dating.
Right.
But when they say they go by radiometric dating, well, they certainly don't go by carbon-14 radiometric dating. Even though public school graduates, it seems to me, Brian, when I ask people, what percentage, in your estimate, of the general public, if you ask them, how do we know the Earth is old? Or how do we know this rock is 300 million years old? And they say carbon-14.
Right.
It seems to me that over 90%, maybe 95% of the public will say carbon 14.
Well, I speak on this subject around the nation and in different audiences, and almost every single time I speak on this, someone will come up and say, what about radiocarbon dating and how it proves
the dinosaurs,
that the rocks are, you know, 300 million years old?
Right.
Okay, so then I have to sort of back up and say, yeah, carbon dating is typically used for dating human artifacts.
Like Pharaoh's dagger.
Sure.
The wooden handle.
Right.
What dynasty was this pharaoh a part of?
Sure.
Yeah.
So archaeology.
So it's used for recent stuff.
Right. Right. Within the last several thousand years. And by the way, it gives good results that match known ages based on things like the age of a king's reign found on a coin sitting beside that dagger handle or something like that.
Right.
And then you can correlate.
When his tomb is excavated.
When it's excavated. So that's where we use radiocarbon. So it's just a secular evolutionary scientist really wouldn't think of carbon dating dinosaur bones, because they are convinced up front that the dinosaur bone is millions of years old. And no matter what carbon date you get for it, it's going to be meaningless because by dogmatic mantra, the dinosaur bone is millions of years old. And so it has to be contamination to them.
So if someone uses uranium, lead, or potassium, argon dating, and they get 280 million year age for this part of a rock and this other part of the rock here, they get 80 million years. It's like dramatic contradiction. But then if you radiocarbon something in the rock, you get something very young in the same rock even. You get something very young, and so they throw out that radiometric date. They don't like that date.
They don't like the carbon date.
But they like the others, even though they're often wildly discordant. They like the others. They're closer to their worldview.
They're closer to their evolutionary expectations. And they have to throw out, that's exactly right, they have to throw out the carbon age for things like carbonized wood found inside sandstone in Australia. And Dr. Snelling analyzed that wood, carbonated that wood, and came up with measurable amounts of radiocarbon still in the wood. And this is a sandstone that's supposed to be several hundred millions of years old.
Yeah, here in Colorado, at a private ranch, a homeschooled dad and his kids helped others excavate an allosaur skull. And in the skull, in the mouth, all this debris, dirt, and rock was shoved in the mouth of this dinosaur as it's being catastrophically buried. And there's a piece of wood in the mouth, and part of the wood is fossilized, part of the wood is petrified, part of the wood is coalified, and part of it is just still regular wood, just organic wood. One piece of wood in the mouth of an allosaur dinosaur skull.
And I predict, based on the results that I've seen so far, almost 50 carbon dates for ancient Earth samples, including many fossils, that if you were to carbon date that chunk of wood, either the carbonized bit or the fresh looking section of that wood piece, that you would get measurable amounts of radiocarbon, because we keep seeing it over and over, as though the whole Earth is only thousands of years old, including all the carbon that's in the Earth's crust.
Mm-hmm. Right before the show, I had mentioned chert and asked if you knew whether or not chert had been carbon dated. We haven't seen that. That's often given very old dates. And we could predict that if they ever get around to carbon dating chert, that it will have radiocarbon in it.
We can predict that, and let's do that. Okay. We predict.
That's a prediction. That's a Brian Thomas Real Science Radio special prediction brought to you.
Mark it down. Anything,
July 2016.
That's right. Any Earth material that has carbon in it is probably going to have measurable amounts of radiocarbon in it. That's a prediction not just based on the science of all the radiocarbon that we've been finding in all these fossils and other sources. It also fits with what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches a recent creation. Mm. Jesus taught a recent creation. He said, have you not read, you know, from the beginning made them male and female. So he did not say he that made them billions of years after the Big Bang beginning made them male and female. He said he believed in Genesis literal and the days of creation and all of it, just like the
global
Bible
flood. And almost all Christians who believe in an old earth reject the global flood. All Christian universities reject. If they believe in an old earth, they reject the global flood.
Which Peter accepted in 2 Peter 3, which Jesus taught, which the prophets taught. So the whole Bible peels apart and crumbles once you start down that slope of saying, well, maybe this didn't mean what that seems to mean, what it says.
Right.
But what I'm saying is we have hard science. We've got 50 measured carbon dates for Earth materials, including many dinosaur fossils, that show that these things are thousands, not millions of years old. And so there's science that supports a straightforward reading of Scripture.
Well, you have a paper on this that you co-authored with Vance Nelson, and it's in a recent issue of the CRSQ, Creation Research Society Quarterly. So we'll link to this, and if people want to, in fact, it's a special edition of the Quarterly, and it's all on a dinosaur original biological material. Could you give us an example of other organisms, other places where they find carbon-14? Because what we say, we put everything in sound bites, you know, on the radio, and we say there's carbon-14 everywhere it's not supposed to be. Everywhere it's not supposed to be, you find carbon-14, and lo and behold, it's there. And then maybe we could talk about the ages that if the Earth is less than 10,000 years, as the Bible indicates, then why do people say, well, this is carbon dated at 30,000 years, 40,000 years before present? So where else do we find carbon-14?
We find carbon-14 in, of course, ancient coal, recent coal. Like there's Ice Age coal, and then there's also Pennsylvanian, Mississippian coal.
Which is like 250 million years old,
right,
allegedly.
Right. And then the Ice Age coal would be something like 30 million year age assignments down to 10 million. But it doesn't matter whether it's the old coal or the recent coal, the lower down in the geologic layers or higher up in the geologic layers, they all return similar levels of radiocarbon as though they were deposited within a very narrow time range, which is, you know, that's what we would expect if the flood really happened. If the flood deposited all these layers, either directly or indirectly, near the time of the flood, only thousands of 4,000 or so years ago, then you'd expect to have similar amounts of radiocarbon in all these different layers. If, however, the evolutionary age assignments are correct, then we would expect to find radiocarbon in none of these layers, except the very most recent, topmost layers that have, for example, human artifacts in them. But we find radiocarbon in
the quaternary.
We find radiocarbon in samples far below quaternary layers. Far below.
Yeah, throughout, most part. Well, in the paper that you guys had published in this CRSQ, and it was spring of 2015, you have a figure six. I just love this figure because you have dinosaur and other fossil carbon data, and you mark it. There's how many? Do you recall how many are on here? How many different specimens that were carbon dated?
Over 40, and these combine already published carbon ages for samples such as ammonite shells from California, from Redding, California. Samples such as ancient wood from Czechoslovakia, ancient coal, and then
you got Melaleuca wood.
Right, that's from Australia. And all of these return radiocarbon ages. But then we mixed the already published results with our new results, which come from a fossil lizard. We found it in fossil fish bones. We found radiocarbon there too, as well as familiar dinosaur. There's even a mosasaur fossil that I found in the secular literature, and somehow they snuck in carbon date.
This was, what, 2011 maybe,
mm-hmm,
that paper, and we reported it on the air. This is a fossil where they found original biological material,
yep,
in this mosasaur bone, and they are arguing very effectively that this is not contamination. This is biological matter that grew in the mosasaur 80 million years ago. That's what they're arguing. And then they say, oh, and by the way, we carbon dated this thing.
Right.
Which is funny because we've asked Jack Horner and Mary Schweitzer to carbon date their dinosaur. We offered Jack Horner, I think, $23,000 grant to do that. And he hemmed and hawed for 8 minutes. Finally, he said, oh, I'll ask Mary. And then they decided not to do it. But this mosasaur, they found a significant quantity of radiocarbon.
Right.
and they were arguing against themselves, because to say that you have an 80 million year old bone and it has original biological material, you have to argue.
It has scales. It has the retina in the back of the eye. It had red patches that they determined were from hemoglobin decay products. So we're talking about molecular preservation.
So this, obviously this fossil has not had a lot of contamination if it's 80 million years old and it still has all this original biological material. It's not being contaminated. It's the original stuff you guys are claiming. But then, oh, by the way, a lot of these carbon atoms, they're carbon-14, so it's contaminated.
Right.
They're arguing against themselves. It's contaminated or it's not.
And they want both.
How do you have a contaminated fossil that's 80 million years old with original mosasaur material?
I think that's a great point. And how do you have a fossil that's contaminated with carbon-14 and yet it's not contaminated when it comes to the molecular preservation? It's either contaminated or it's not.
Yeah. And so it's rather convenient to say, well, this part is contaminated, that part is not. But we're talking about carbon atoms mixed throughout the fossil. And so,
well, in the big picture, we're talking about, this is one of 43 on this list. And I have more besides that I've collected since this list was published. And we just keep finding radiocarbon in the same range, 23 to 55 or so thousand carbon years. So
carbon years.
That's different than calendar years.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about that in 1 second. I want one last point first. These 43 specimen you have here, you have them classified Cenozoic, Mesozoic, Paleozoic. So these are three ages in the geologic column.
Three divisions. Three eras, yeah.
Eras. And so pretty much you find the same thing in all these eras.
Whether it's Paleozoic, we have a secular date for a Cambrian sponge fossil where they found original chitin and chitin-associated protein, still squishy.
And that's Cambrian.
In a Cambrian layer with its assigned age of 505 million years. And they snuck in a carbon date for that, too.
500 million years old, allegedly, and it's got
radiocarbon. Radiocarbion in it, which means that the 505 million is wrong, and it has to be fewer than 100,000, just by virtue of the fact that it has radiocarbon in it. Whether it's that one, or whether it's all these dinosaur fossils that occur in rock layers Mesozoic, or whether it's recent rock layers, they all have the same range of radiocarbon ages, as though these layers were deposited, Paleozoic, Mesozoic, Cenozoic, much of them, especially the Paleozoic and Mesozoic, we would say are flood fossils deposited mostly during 1 year of Earth history, mm-hmm. the flood year. And so we have comparable amounts of radiocarbon in all these fossils as though they were deposited within a narrow time range.
And I don't believe any young Earth creationist has argued there is no contamination in these fossils. That wouldn't be reasonable to say there's no contamination.
That's not really a scientific statement. That's an omniscient statement. There is no contamination. I know everything.
Right.
Science doesn't do that. What we can say is that we have not yet found a reasonable source of contamination, but we're still looking.
But let's say you dig out a Triceratops horn from the Hell Creek Formation in Montana, and it's sitting there soaking in groundwater, it certainly could have contamination, right?
It could.
Of carbon-14.
It could. So we look for signs and signatures of contamination. One of those would be the carbon-13. Now, here's a whole new animal, but carbon-13 is a stable isotope of carbon, and it occurs naturally in a certain ratio in certain tissues, in certain animals and plants that live in certain environments. So in other words, the carbon-13 ratio reflects where you live, what kind of creature you are, what kind of food you eat. And that ratio can tell you that kind of information, even in fossils. If the carbon-13 that's embedded in that bone was contaminated with modern carbon-13 source, however it got there, we're just imagining this right now, then what would that do to the original carbon ratio?
It
would
screw it up. That information.
You'd lose that information. It would be wiped out. So you'd have random.
You wouldn't be able to tell, for example, what the diet was of this particular animal.
No, because it would look all the same in different tissues, like teeth versus bone. it would look the same across different animals. Same in fish as in dinosaurs from the same layer. But that's not what we find. We find carbon-13 is different in the teeth than it is in the bone. It's different in the fish than it is in the dinosaur. And it reflects the differences parallel those that we see in today's animals that eat certain diets in certain environments.
And the biology and the ecology biology,
yes,
of the creatures
is reflected in its carbon-13. And that's what we see in these fossils, indicating that it's not been contaminated.
It's like in the early days of finding dinosaur soft tissue, they noticed that they're sequencing proteins, the kinds of proteins you'd find in an osteocyte cell, that's what they're finding. And then they're looking in the nucleus and they're finding histone proteins. So they're finding the right thing in the right place, which means it's not bacteria and it's just not random contamination. We've got dinosaur material that grew in the dinosaur. So you're saying now, this is new to me here at Real Science Radio. We've been doing this for 25 years. I'm not familiar with looking at these different isotopes, like elements like carbon, carbon 12, carbon 13, carbon 14. They're like different flavors of elements in the periodic table. So when carbon 13, that varies based on your diet, and you should be able to identify that in an organism's body even after it dies.
Right. Carbon 13 accumulates in different ratios.
The ratio
in different
to 12
tissues.
To carbon, yeah, carbon 12.
Exactly. The ratio of how much carbon 13 to carbon 12 you have in your bones is a little bit different than that which you have in your muscles. And it's different for people who eat fish than it is for those who eat mostly grain.
Wow.
So archaeologists and paleontologists use the carbon 13 ratios to try to gather information about what people and animals ate, where they lived, how they lived. But none of that information would be preserved if the ratios were contaminated by having modern carbon leach into the bone. Now, this does happen. Contamination does happen.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying
is,
that was
my point earlier, that it's not being argued that there's never contamination.
Right.
That's not being argued. The argument is the data overwhelmingly shows that there is endogenous, if you will, carbon-14.
We found in a recent study that the places where you find original carbon-13 ratios, we also find reports of original tissues. And so,
original biological tissue.
Right.
Wow, that's interesting.
That's what we're saying, is we're looking for contamination, but we're not finding it.
Mm.
If you contaminate the tissues with some modern bacteria or something, then you should also have some processes going on through water percolation or something that would replace the carbon ratios and wipe those out. But we don't see that. We see the original carbon ratios. We see the original tissues. We see original dinosaur stuff, thousands of years old, not millions of years old. That's what it looks like to us.
So then there is something, a discipline called forensic accounting. When you got a business and they're cooking the books and they're robbing their clients, their investors, then forensic accountants will go in, maybe from the FBI, and they look at the data and they could often determine these numbers are fake. This is a fake set of books. They're not real, by looking at the data, which is so interesting. And that's been done with this carbon-14 data. When scientists have analyzed the data, it's obvious this is not all from contamination. It shows the pattern of being actual data.
Correct. Correct. So
that in and of itself is a very powerful argument. And then also, I think we talked about this a few years back when a gentleman named Hugh Miller was on the show. I think you know of Hugh's work. He's carbon-14 dated all kinds of dinosaur bones. And he points out that when they carbon date the matrix around the bones, they don't get the carbon-14 that they get in the bones. So that's an indication that this is not contamination that's leaching into the fossil. The carbon-14 is in the bone because it was in the living dinosaur.
Well, he made that conclusion based on very few results.
Okay.
So I think that's a question that still needs more data to be answered properly.
Okay.
We need to collect more carbon-14 measurements from the surrounding matrix at different distances from a fossil. We may find that the carbon-14 is leaching, say, from a fossil into its surroundings rather than the other way around. We don't know. I don't think there's enough data.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you for that. Okay, so last topic. When the dates come in older than, say, 10,000 years, to use a round number, so the biblical chronology says that the earth is very young, approximately the age of history, written history. But if you get a radiocarbon date of something that matches, say, 40,000 radiocarbon years, then our old earth friends, creationist friends, will say, well, that's proof that dinosaur falsifies your literal Genesis interpretation. So how about that, when the dates are more than 10,000 years?
Now, they're making this leap and this assumption that they don't know that they're making. Here's the leap. The leap is 40,000 carbon years equals 40,000 calendar years, as though they're measuring, as though scientists measure years directly out of these
fossils. They're not measuring years.
They're not measuring years.
They're counting atoms.
They're counting atoms. So what they have to do is convert the measured ratio of carbon-14 to carbon-12 atoms in a sample. They have to convert that ratio into a time in years. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you do that? By making assumptions. So they plug that number, that ratio, into a pretty large formula that contains many variables, some of which we don't know.
And others, we do have ideas. Let me bring up two. And these are indicators that the ratio of carbon-14 to carbon-12 was way different in the past than today. Today, it's about one carbon-14 atom approximately to a trillion carbon atoms. Well, I had a scientist on the show within the last year, Dr. Henry Richter. He was with NASA. And he was the chief scientist developing the instrumentation for NASA's, a number of their early missions. Brilliant guy. And he pointed out that the Earth's magnetic field has been decaying at a measured rate. Now it's about 10% weaker than it was 100 years ago.
Wait a minute, Bob. We're talking about carbon dating. What does the magnetic field have to do with carbon dating?
Well, what Dr. Richter pointed out was that the stronger magnetic field will end up, the result will be less carbon-14 produced in the upper atmosphere. If it's one atom to a trillion, well, let's say as the Earth's magnetic field gets stronger over the last thousands of years,
winding
it's
the clock
decaying,
back.
Right.
Yeah.
Going backward, now it's decaying, that you might have one atom to 1.2 trillion, or it changed. We know it was different in the last 100 years. So that's a ratio that we know has not been constant.
Right. And so because of that, because of the diminishing strength of the Earth's magnetic field, we think that's a big reason why the older artifacts with older carbon dates diverge from the calendar years at an increasing rate the further in the past you get.
The
further back you go. So you may have a sample that's actually 3,000 years old, but the carbon date starts to get to 4 and 5,000 carbon years for that sample. And then something that's even older than that, all of a sudden the carbon years jump to 10,000 carbon years and then 20,000 carbon years for just 50 calendar years. I'm just giving almost random examples just to illustrate the idea that the further back you go in actual calendar years, you exponentially go older with your carbon years.
And then there's one other observation, and that's how much carbon has been buried. How much is under the surface of the earth?
Think of just all the coal and oil that was buried in the flood.
Yeah, tremendous quantities. That affects this ratio, because if you bury that much of the earth's biosphere is now buried in strata, in sedimentary layers, then that ratio has changed dramatically in the direction of giving older, apparent older ages for something that's 6,000 years old.
So we do have reasonable explanations for why there could be higher carbon years for some of these samples.
Right. But carbon-14 in the middle of a diamond that's supposed to be 2 billion years old, there is no reasonable explanation for how that could have survived, because now you're talking about changing nuclear physics, the decay rate of a carbon-14 atom. And that is not reasonable. And what's interesting is our measurements are things that we could measure and understand in the short term, whereas their measurements are things that have to be true for billions of years. And they're much more difficult to test their assumptions. And we have hundreds of geochronometers that require just very short-term calibration. And look, you only need erosion continuing for a short time and all the fossils are gone. And yet they make extrapolations going back hundreds of millions and billions of years.
Well, the millions of years, the billions of years, those age assignments do fly in the face of several, actually many, solid scientific observations. And carbon-14 in diamonds, coal, oil,
yeah,
natural gas, dinosaur fossils, shells, wood. That's one. This is one. And it's not just one. It's not just, oh, we found one carbon date,
yeah,
a bit of radiocarbon in one diamond. No, this is...
It's all of it.
This is all kinds of stuff.
Carbon-14 is everywhere it's not supposed to be.
Yep.
And when the anomalies are everywhere and predictable, they're no longer anomalies. So diamonds are a creationist best friend.
So is carbon-14.
Carbon-14 is a creationist best friend. Hey, diamonds are made out of carbon. That works.
That works.
And dinosaurs are missionary lizards, right? Because red blood cells show that evolution is false and the Bible's true. Just the red blood cells in dinosaur bones tell us that God's word is true.
And radiocarbon echoes that same message. And if the Bible's true about Earth history being recent, the Bible's true about the flood, you know, if the flood was real, what would have happened? It would have buried all kinds of dead creatures and maybe even redeposited some of them and yeah, torn up the whole Earth. And so we've got all these rock layers that fit what the Bible says. We've got radiocarbon results that fit what the Bible says. We've got red blood cells and blood vessels that are still squishy inside dinosaur bones that fit what the Bible says. Hey, if the Bible's right about history, then it's right about everything else it says.
Sure.
And that's personal. You know, that's real.
Yeah. Yeah. And that means that God made us in his image, in his likeness, and Jesus Christ came to save us, those who will turn to him and trust in his death and resurrection. So, Brian Thomas, what an honor to have you back in studio. What a thrill. Thank you for visiting us here in Colorado.
Thanks so much for having us.
You're very welcome. Check out our website. It's rsr.org. And ICR, the Institute for Creation Research, their website is icr.org. Fabulous website. So this is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.